Call the county council meeting of April 12th to order. First thing will be approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker.
Good morning. I would like to suggest that we defer on the audit contract item till next week. We're waiting for some more information.
What was that again?
Audit contract under Mrs. Webb. And also under executive session, we do not have a need today for the executive session.
Okay. Okay, we're going to remove the audit contract part of the agenda and executive session and possible action executive session. That's all?
Yes.
Need a motion?
So moved with amendments.
And a second.
Second.
Have a motion, a second, to approve the amended agenda. Any questions? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. In our packets were the minutes from March 29th. Anybody have any changes or corrections to them? Those stand approved. Thank you. Correspondence. Mr. Moore?
Yes, Mr. President. I have one, and it's dear friends at the Sussex County Council, thank you for being a sponsor for this year's Women's Day celebration. I hope that you enjoyed a great evening celebrating and honoring two very special women who are so deserving of distinction. Your participation in this event is greatly appreciated, and we'll be able to touch more lives because of you. We look forward to having you at future Delaware Tech events. With gratitude, Jody, Alumni Association board member. And it was dated the 31st, March 31st, and that is all.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Baker.
The first item on the agenda here is a proclamation for Fair Housing Month, and with us today we have Representative Ruth Briggs King and Mr. Bill Lacates, Brad Whaley. I don't know if they'd like to come up and while they're coming up, I'll read the proclamation proclaiming the month of April as Fair Housing Month in Sussex County. Whereas April 11, 2011 marks the 43rd anniversary of the passage of the U.S. Fair Housing Law, Title 13 or 8 of the Civil Rights Act of 1968 as amended, which enunciates a national policy of fair housing without regard to race, color, religion, national origin, sex, familial status, or handicap, and encourages fair housing opportunities for all citizens. And whereas Delaware's Fair Housing Act further prevents discrimination based upon creed, marital status, age, or sexual orientation. And whereas the Sussex County Council, as well as the Sussex County Association of Realtors, is committed to highlight the Fair Housing Law, Title 8 of the Civil Rights Act of 1968, by continuing to address discrimination in our community, to support programs that will educate the public about the right to equal housing opportunities, and to plan partnership efforts with other organizations to help assure every American of their right to fair housing. And now, therefore, we, the Sussex County Council of the State of Delaware, do hereby resolve that April 2011, being Fair Housing Month, begins a year-long commemoration of the U.S. Fair Housing Law in Sussex County, and urge all citizens to wholeheartedly recognize this celebration throughout the year.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Judy Dean, and I'm the current chair of the Housing Opportunities Partnership. And I'd like to introduce Sue Bramhall, is also a member of our committee.
Hello, Mrs. Bramhall.
And our executive VP, Ruth Briggs King, and the other two. I just have a few words. It's my pleasure to represent over 1,200 members of our association, the Sussex County Association of Realtors. As some of you know, our association has been very involved in projects that impact private property rights, as well as fair housing, including workforce housing and foreclosure prevention. April 2011 marks the 43rd anniversary of the 1968 landmark Fair Housing Act. Each year, realtors recognize the significance of this event and reconfirm our commitment to upholding fair housing law, as well as our commitment to offering equal professional service to all in their search for real property. As realtors, we take a pledge to provide equal professional service without regard to the race, color, religion, sex, handicap, familial status, national origin, or sexual orientation of any prospective client, customer, or of the residents of any community. We keep informed about fair housing law and practices, improving our clients' and customers' opportunities and our business. We develop advertising that indicates that everyone is welcome and no one is excluded, expanding our clients' and customers' opportunities to see, buy, or lease property. We inform our clients and customers about their rights and responsibilities under the fair housing laws by providing brochures and other information. We document our efforts to provide professional service, which will assist us in becoming a more responsive and successful realtor. We refuse to tolerate noncompliance. We learn about those who are different from us and celebrate those differences. We take a positive approach to fair housing practices and aspire to follow the spirit as well as the letter of the law. And we develop and implement fair housing practices for our firms to carry out the spirit of this declaration. I need to especially mention the professional and compassionate work of Bill LaCates, Brad Whaley, and Brandy Bennett. We have worked with Sussex County's community development for many years on many projects. When others are not able to provide funds or muscle to address a need, your community development comes through. We have worked together to provide first-time homebuyer programs, educate and encourage the moderate-priced housing initiative, and many other issues over the past few years. In fact, when other housing agencies forget it is Fair Housing Month in Sussex, Bill and SCORE remember because it's not a once-a-year event. It is a commitment day in and day out. Home ownership matters in the nation, in our state, and especially in Sussex County. In fact, the housing market makes up $4 trillion, or about 15% of the total U.S. gross domestic product. The housing industry has led the way out of six of the last U.S. recessions, and for every two homes sold in the United States, one job is created. I want to thank you for recognizing fair housing.
Thank you.
And we also have some On Common Ground books for each of you.
He needs
Thanks a lot, Judy.
I'll pay for you. $21.
Oh, yeah, jump right in here.
Got there about cats.
Don't say
them. Come on here, Bill. You drag it in here.
I like cats.
Are we squeezed up enough for?
You want to get right here?
Take care of
them. Thank you all very much for what you do. We appreciate it.
Thank you for coming,
Mrs. Bramhall. Thank you for coming.
Nice
seeing you again.
Yes, it is nice to see you.
There's two of them girls. One of them's.
She's on my.
I know, but she's dear to my heart.
She's my friend on Facebook.
Who?
Oh Lord.
Mrs. Bramhall.
Oh well,
that's my friend.
There's two Georgia Henry up there.
Next, Mr. Baker.
Okay. The next item is legislative update, and we have several items. The first item is regarding a provision of Delaware State Code, which notes that the county administrator must be a resident of Sussex County. But there is another provision as part of that that says that at the time of his or her appointment, he shall be a resident of Sussex County at the time of the appointment. So in order to give the county council some additional flexibility and to enable the county council to consider applicants who may be a resident of another county or state, we are recommending that the county council ask the General Assembly and the governor to consider a change in the state law, deleting the sentence that requires a future county administrator to be a resident of the county at the time of the appointment. The county administrator would still have to be a resident of the county while he or she is county administrator. We do have a draft legislation that Mr. Moore has developed. For your consideration. And as you can see, it would eliminate the requirement that the administrator be a resident at the time of the appointment. The administrator still must be...
A resident one case.
A resident of the county.
While serving.
While serving, yeah. The first day, they've got to be a resident.
Hey, council, any comments? Am I okay with this?
And today, I'm just curious, Everett, in today's, you know, laws and things, I mean, can we require somebody to, as a thing for employment? Can we actually, is this constitutional or whatever? I don't, it just seems like it's outdated and...
It seems to me it's outdated as well, and that's why we're asking it be changed. You know, whether or not it's constitutional, I'll not make a opine on that, but it's on the books at this point, and it would be safest to see if we can get that changed.
I figured somebody could challenge that easily, and okay, just curious. Thank you.
It appears a consensus is it was, we'll move forward with this.
Yeah.
Could I have a motion if...
Yes, sir.
Okay. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council endorses a change in Delaware State Code which would eliminate the requirement that the Sussex County Administrator be a Sussex County resident at the time of his or her appointment.
I'll make a motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any question on a motion? Now we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir. Next.
Mr. Godwin had a appointment in Newark with Ms. Steptola from our engineering department, so he cannot be here today. But he wanted to report that House Bill 31, which is the bill that changes the date for taxes, passed both chambers and is awaiting the governor's signature, and it's our understanding the governor will sign. House Bill 60 is a bill regarding... called the dog tethering bill. Basically, it would provide additional requirements, and in particular, it would require that there would be a prohibition on tethering dogs between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. unless it is only for a period of less than 15 minutes. And we've got some concerns about, staff has some concerns about this bill. And the impact it would have on our contract with the Delaware SPC or Delaware Animal Care and Control. And with us today, we have Eddie Parker, Alan Holloway, and Mr. Maury Goldwaite from Delaware Animal Care and Control. And I don't know if they'd like to make any comments about this.
I'd like to know what they have to say about it.
Okay. If you have any comments, please. There you go. Please come forward.
Well, I have no comments.
They're all coming forward. They all got comments. Good morning, Mr. Parker.
Good morning. We have, as you can imagine, some concerns since we've been given the authority and the responsibility of enforcing dog control with the one particular item that Mr. Baker mentioned concerning tethering between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. We feel this is going to be a section of the code. It's going to be used to create nuisance complaints. Someone wants to complain about their neighbor's dog barking. We're going to be contacted, and someone's going to have to respond between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. to investigate this. They're going to have to observe this violation for a period of at least 15 minutes. And we have great concern about that and how it may reflect on the contract that we currently have, or the responsibility that it's going to lay on us in the county to enforce this if we have to do that. The responsibility was given to us. We didn't ask for it, obviously. It's a burden on us financially. But they seem to want to continue now to create rules and regulations concerning a matter that was given to us to handle. So we would certainly urge that the council take a position. I have Mr. Godwin oppose this bill as it's currently written. Murray here can give you some more information as to just how it will impact his folks in trying to enforce the contract that we currently have.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Good morning, all.
The way that it's said, it's not that we oppose the tethering bill. I mean, it is a good idea. But the way that it's written, it's going to create more havoc than it's going to do good because of one, the length of time. I mean, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m., you can tether your dog to the stoop for 15 minutes. Who knows that it's 15 minutes unless the dog is creating disturbance and your neighbor is calling in. It is a good idea not to have your dog tethered outside, unprotected, on a chain to where the nocturnal animals and everything else can come in and make contact. You got the rabies vector concern here. The nocturnal animals are out foraging for food, and the dog is out there. We respond to over 1,200 dog bites a year throughout the state for just this particular reason. If the dog is not inoculated, then of course it can go in a it's a mandatory 6-month quarantine by law, or the dog could be destroyed. My suggestion, or our suggestion from our point of view, is to remove that 15-minute time period. Your dog cannot be outside, unattended, on a tether, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. If it is, you should be having it on a leash out there walking it. It's going to create, it takes away the prospect of the animal being attacked by another animal, either a wild or an animal that's next door neighbor, so forth, or creating it a disturbance of barking dog. And this is where we really think that this is going to be put in play is. The neighbors are going to be calling complaints of basically nuisance and barking dog issues. Once again, we just cannot go up there and write a citation for the dog being outside. We actually physically have to make sure that it's within the law. It's being out there for 15 minutes. Was it the same dog that was out there before we arrived? I mean, these are variables that are in play that we tend to deal with, and of course. We deal with them, in the courts, and many times they get thrown out, and it's a waste of man hours, and time and money for county, state, and for our employees when they could be out there on the road doing some other good. That is our recommendation on that portion of it. The other issue is. Under Section 6, it has been rewritten to where the lesser of for a tether is either 10 foot or 3 times the length of the body of the dog. Before it was the greater. Okay, the lesser means if you have a Chihuahua, the body length is 11 inches. That tether is only 33 inches long. A normal walking leash is 4 feet. To tether your dog for that, so what we recommend is it should be the greater, either the 10 foot or 3 times the length of the dog, such as if it's a St. Bernard, because it's 4 foot long, then it needs a 12 foot chain. There's no mobility for the animal to even walk. Now, this isn't just between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. This is any time that an animal is tethered outside. And on a 3 foot tether, the animal has no mobility, has no protection. What they're asking for in here is should be changed, or it should remain the same, which the current law states 10 feet. On Section 9, where it states the running water must be available on any property at which the dogs are kept. Change the running water to potable water must be available at all times. Running water, by definition, is any type of running water, which could mean runoff water in ditches. You would not want to be giving your dog this type of water. It's not healthy. I believe what their intent was that we do have kennels that are on property that do not have a public water system or a well or so forth. Their intent was to make sure that water is provided. Well, stating that potable water must be available at all times makes that statement, and potable water is drinking water. As written, if passed, once again, I believe it is going to be a nightmare as far as nuisance calls. Making the owner responsible for the care of that animal by either removing the 15-minute time limit, just basically stating it cannot be outside alone. And that's what we're asking, that it's not outside alone. Or if it is going to be outside that 15 minutes on a tether, it must be attended by its owner.
Are you allowed to leave dogs in a pen all night outside?
Dogs in the pen are not susceptible to the nocturnal animals because they're enclosed in their kennel. That is not addressed in here, and that's something that's kind of vague, because they do ask that all animals be brought in during warnings of tornadoes, hurricanes, and so forth that are published by the National Weather National Weather Advisory. Mm-hmm. The kennels that we inspect and everything else there, I mean, they are great kennels. Most dogs at night, they're inside their kennels, they're inside their primary living areas that's enclosed, they're sleeping.
It's not a kennel issue. Most of the problem is at the private home.
Right.
So we're going to be riding, I don't know, I just seems
any more
crazy.
Questions from council?
Yeah, who's the sponsor on this bill? Who would
Who's the sponsor on the bill?
The sponsor for the House is Representative Jacques.
George.
Representative George, Senator Blevins, and Senator
Peterson.
Somebody didn't have nothing to do.
Yeah, I'm not against the intent of it, but that sounds like it's a mess to me. The bill sounds like it's a mess.
I think we just oppose it and hopefully it gets better, written. But I don't know. I mean, there's so much in here I oppose.
Like making a motion, sir.
When I see Peterson's name on it, it tells me.
The
something.
Recommendation from our staff is to oppose
bill
this
as
bill. So why don't we just leave it at that and try not to give them a bunch of suggestions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Second.
We have a motion and a second to
have
Mr. Godwin make them aware that we are opposed to the bill as it's written.
As
as our fine staff recommend. Any questions on the motion?
I recommend tell them to make sure your children are secured before you go for your dog, too. He doesn't say anything about that. So.
We'll call for the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Well, I'll vote yes, even though I like the intent of it, but the bill's a mess, so I'll vote yes to oppose it.
Mr. Colt?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Anything else, Dave?
Yes. The next item is West Rehoboth bond rating.
Trash.
In 1995, the Sussex County Council issued a variety of bonds to fund the West Rehoboth Sewer Project, and that funding include a $39.2 million USDA loan, $27 million in state revolving fund loans, and $19 million in publicly issued revenue debt, which I think was the first ever revenue bonds issued by the county. In 2005, the balance of the revenue debt that was issued in 95 was refinanced to save money for the district. And these bonds at the time were rated A on a standalone basis by Standard & Poor's. Mrs. Webb received notice earlier this month that Standard & Poor's raised the rating on these bonds from an A to an A+. And Mrs. Webb attached a copy of the release from Standard & Poor's, the summary. Basically, it says the rating reflects that what we see as the county's stable and unconcentrated residential service area. While growth has slowed due to the recession, it remains positive. They saw a consistently strong coverage of senior lien debt service, strong liquidity, manageable capital requirements, and they do note that the bonds are special limited obligations of this district. We have had an increase in the EDUs in the West Rehoboth area of 17% from 2006 to 2011. They also note that debt as a percent of the property, plant, and equipment has declined from 68% from 80% in fiscal 2005. The stable outlook is based on Standard & Poor's view of the consistent financial performance despite some decline in certain revenue sources pledged to the bonds through the recession. We would like to thank our finance department and engineering department for their hard work, which has enabled us to maintain a strong financial base for this, which is our largest sewer district or sewer project.
It's mine.
And also, we'd like to thank the county council for providing the leadership to enable this bond upgrade to occur. And I know, Mrs. Webb is the finance director, and Mr. Izzo, the county engineer, Rodney Marvel, Gina Jennings, Kathy Roth, Patty Fawcett, and many others. The main operations of it has been good too. So we wish to thank them. Thank you.
Joe.
Thank you.
You're still on.
Yep. And then finally, county administrators report. County Government Day, April 15th. We are pleased to again sponsor the annual County Government Day on April 15th. At 9:30 a.m., high school junior representatives from Girls State and Boys State in Sussex County will meet in the County Council chambers. A mock County Council session will occur with the Girls States and Boys State representatives assuming leadership roles. It's always an interesting experience to watch student representatives tackle county issues as presented by county department heads. This program can be seen on the county's website, and it is, of course, open to the public. Family Fun Fest, April 16th. A Family Fun Fest will be held at the Western Sussex Boys and Girls Club from 12 to 4 p.m. on April 16th, Saturday. Goal of the program will be to encourage more active living and healthy eating. Also, Spring into Health community walks will occur at various locations in the county at 9 a.m. on the 16th. Breakwater States Phase 3, substantial completion. The engineering department granted substantial completion to Breakwater States Phase 3 on April 6th. Developer is Breakwater LLC. Project is located on the north side of Gills Neck Road in the western hub of the expansion of Dewey Beach Sewer District, consisting of 25 single-family lots.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lank, Director of Planning and Zoning.
Morning. For the record, I am Lawrence Lank, Director of Planning and Zoning. Oh. A new thing.
Thank you.
And have you aboard.
Our wind expert will be pleased you did that.
We have for discussion this morning a proposed draft of an ordinance in relating to regulations on casinos. It was been passed out to you is substantially different from what we originally discussed a month or so ago. If you remember, a month or so ago we discussed an ordinance whereby casinos or gambling could be permitted as conditional use in the AR1 to AR2, the B1 to C1 to CR1 and the Marine Districts. Now the proposal before you is a amended version based on comments through our legal team and comments through your DC, our consultants on land use, and it's substantially different and now suggests that it should be limited to the C1 zoning district and does not reference, and it's still a conditional use, and it does not reference the AR districts, the B1, the CR1 or the Marine. It also makes reference that it could be considered in the industrial districts. I think that should be up to council whether you want to go any further than C1 if you're going to give this consideration. C1 district has been existing since the adoption of the zoning ordinance in January 1st, 1971. And the majority of those districts are along Route 113, 13, and 1. And there's a lot of smaller districts that are located and scattered throughout the county in different intersections. And I don't know that there's any of them that have size enough that would support such an activity. The proposal, as I stated, has been reviewed by legal and also reviewed by URDC. And what Patrick Vanderslice says and trying to do in final form has added italics and italics in parentheses, and the definitions have changed, and I think what URDC did was look at other states and other counties that have similar regulations and tried to get a better wording than what we had in our first draft. So the proposed definition would now is to be a casino, a facility that houses and accommodates gambling as defined by this ordinance, and that in, is authorized and approved for such purpose under state law. And then the second section relates to the definition of gambling. It's a little lengthy, and it includes part of it's in italics, so that it would be an amendment to what was originally opposed. The original reference they used involving the lawful wagering and or risking of money or tokens or cards with a monetary value on an event that had an uncertain outcome with a primary intent of winning additional money and or material goods, and then in italics, within a facility authorized for such purposes under state law. Gambling shall include but not be limited to slot machines or other gambling devices, poker, blackjack, roulette, and other table games, betting on racing of animals, and or betting on the outcomes of sports events or similar matters. This term shall only include types of gambling that are authorized and approved under state law. So we repeat, as we continue, it repeats, we have to have, it has to comply with state law before we can even give it consideration. And then in addition, this term shall not regulate raffles, bingo, or similar small games of chance that are authorized by the Delaware Gaming Control Board by veterans, charitable or religious organization, or a fraternal society, and which operates as a customarily incidental accessory use. The example of that could be the Moose, or it could be the Elks Lodge, or could include fire company too, most likely. And then a gambling device is defined as a slots machine, or other mechanical or electronic device or machine which is used in any gambling activity. And then again, in reference to the document before you, it relates that it should be a conditional use in a C1 district only and not include AR, AR2, B1, CR1, or Marine. I mean, that's something the council should give consideration to whether or not you want to consider it just in the commercial C1, or if you want to include it into the AR1, AR2, B1. The B1's typically neighborhood business. They're small parcels. They're not large. I can't think of a large B1 district that could accommodate that activity anyway. And there's very few marine districts, and marine districts are typically for purpose of marina and residential development. So that's another place that probably really shouldn't be considered.
Should be?
Shouldn't be. Should not
okay.
be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we only have a few, and they're mm-hmm. remote in some
right.
cases.
Hard to get to.
And they're small, and they're typically already developed.
Mm-hmm.
Section 3 of the section references placement as the definition, or the word casino between other words, just to imply that it's located in a conditional use. And that is the C1 district reference being Roman numeral 10, or 11, excuse me.
C1 or CR.
And then under that, we provide for the conditional use section, which is the 115 Roman numeral 24, 115-172 special requirements. And then it relates more to casinos and references the location or the reference to the entity seeking the conditional use shall be in good standing with the state of Delaware and all other regulatory authorities at the time the conditional use is requested. And repeatedly threatened the ordinance were relating to the state. So basically the state has to approve first before council should give it any consideration. It gives the council the opportunity to reject an application that the state may have approved. I'm not sure how that's going to work. Then the entity seeking a conditional use for a casino should not have had a casino or gambling operation license revoked and or terminated within or outside the state of Delaware. Any suspension shall be described. The application shall list the names of all persons and entities proposed to have more than 10% ownership in a casino. Again, on that one, it relates to the state of Delaware and being outside the state of Delaware. The state of Delaware is going to have to be the one to have to tell us that they have had licenses revoked. I don't know how we would acquire that information. I keep looking at Everett to see if he agrees with me or not.
I'm going to defer to Mr. Vanderslice, who's been involved. Yes, Mr. Vanderslice is here.
He should come up here with me.
Come on up here.
Come on down.
Yeah.
He can save my grace today, I'm sure.
And be sure to say your full name and address, please.
Patrick Vanderslice, attorney at Moore & Rudd, PA. A lot, and I also have a draft copy of where I have incorporated all the italics and the changes, so you have a clean copy to do this. So I know that the one that was passed out has all the italics. What I've done is incorporated that, and also, and I'll, if I'm allowed to pass this out, to show you also where I've tweaked some language to make it go with the Delaware Code, especially with the aspects of the Delaware Constitution and Title 28 of the Delaware Code, which talks about the volunteer firefighters, the fraternal organizations. Of course, we want to make sure that we don't step on any of that with the poker that can be played, lotteries or bingo or anything like this. So,
sure, if you can pass those out now, we could be here. This is the latest version.
This is the one that incorporates the italics, and also there, I'll show you where there's some tweaks where I took it more after talking with the URDC and took it from theirs and made it more towards the Delaware laws. But with this, what we were looking at, and when I drafted it, it came from a meeting of Mr. Lank, Mr. Baker, and also Mr. Robinson and Mr. Burrell. And we were doing it broad-based at that time. And then after we started talking about it and with Mr. Lank's input, we wanted to make sure that, you know, looking at properties, the first thing probably going to look at, you know, AR1, we wanted to keep it away from that. Now, this doesn't say that somebody can't come in with a huge plot of land, AR1, that's on 113 or 1, and first put in to get it made to be C1. But then, after they went to C1, then they would, if it was a casino, then they'd have to go through the conditional use process, too. So it doesn't say that, you know, you have another area that can't be tried to go to C1, but they'd have to get the C1 approved first, and then have to go through this aspect of the casino process. Yep. So that's why we took it down to the C1 and wanted to keep it more towards, you know, if there is a casino and was ever approved, you're going to want it near major thoroughfares such as 113, 1, or 13.
Can I burst Patrick's bubble?
Yeah.
C1 district is now a closed district, and right, closed. No mechanism to apply for additional C1 district.
Right.
That's all right.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought we closed it, and now, right, and now I'm hearing so much.
CR1 to allow right it to be.
You are talking about CR1 then.
No.
No.
But then that would have to be something that the council would look at to see, because it would only be C1s. Mm-hmm. So if the expansion, which could easily be done, because what we're doing here is, as a conditional use, if the council decided that they wanted to go towards an AR1 or anything like that, all would have to be is the definition inserted into that part of the code, the way we have it set up. Because if you see on Section 3 on the new version, or the most recent draft version, on that, that's the C1 district, and we've just inserted the word casino because we've already defined it between bus terminals and cemeteries. If there was another section that the council wanted this to pertain to, we could take that section and insert the definition in the same place, and then it still would be under the special requirements, which is Section 4. They would have to go through all of that. Sure. So it is something that's easy to amend in that
Shouldn't
realm.
Shouldn't we do that before we introduce it? Go ahead and insert the CR1?
You would have to, if you, to be able to add a district, it has to be inserted before you hold a public hearing.
Right.
Before this mm-hmm is introduced.
So that's why, yeah, that's with the discussion to see how the council wants to, and it's not anything that would be difficult to do.
I mean, is now the appropriate time to pose that question?
Mm-hmm. I would think so, yeah.
Do you understand, right now it's written with just C1.
Mm-hmm.
It was pointed out accurately that CR1 is the only district that can be created since mm-hmm C1 is a closed district. Rather, yeah,
basically, C1 and CR1 are the same,
mm-hmm,
except C1 allowed for multifamily right use. That's how we lost a lot of our C1 district, mm-hmm, as far as commercial mm-hmm availability.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because all of a sudden they're all being developed as multifamily at 12 units an acre.
Right.
So CR1 doesn't really allow for a multifamily residential use.
Except it does after
the public hearing process. So.
Right.
All right. We got Mr. Coleman.
Yeah, I just got something's confusing me here. I was hoping we could maybe get a category that would just, a new zoning category that would be just for this use, limited to this use only. That way it wouldn't get so complicated, because if we had an AR district and somebody came in and wanted to get it, first of all, changed to CR1 or C1 or whatever one, and it may be a big, huge, you know, piece of ground. And then after they get that approved, then they can go for a conditional use. Well, what we may find out what we do, and then all of a sudden the legislation or something doesn't come through, and we've ended up just rezoning, mm-hmm. you know, 30 acres, 40 acres, 50 acres, C1 in an AR district for just, you know, another reason. But anyway, so I would rather, I mean, that worries me. So was there any thoughts of just looking at it as a separate zoning category? Just create a whole new category that would just, for those types of uses?
I think that's one of the things we looked at, and then through discussion and also discussion with the URDC, it was looked, and this might be if you expand it, because what we're looking at is at the C1. So if you did expand it or say districts, that's something that it could be adapted. Of course, then you'd have to, I think you'd incorporate, you know, we'd start to get into setbacks and all that if we created a whole new
I understand it, but my concern is somebody comes in standing there where you are and says, you know, we'd like to have a C whatever district for a casino, racino, or whatever you want to call it,
right?
And we want 50-60 acres and in an area that, you know, wasn't zoned and nothing pressure anyway, and then all of a sudden everything falls apart, because once we rezone something, it stays forever. We're stuck with it,
right?
Where the conditional use, you know, it fades away. A lot of things fade away. Subdivisions fade away. If there's a way that you could put in here somehow that if the conditional use didn't get approved, that it would go back and revoke the change that was requested for that specific use. And since the use didn't get approved,
so tied in together.
The change of zone gets sunsetted immediately or something like that.
So, or what?
It has to go in tandem. In other words, one has to, you just can't approve one and not get the other. You approve one, you have to get, you know, you got to get them both. If you don't get them both,
So basically what you're requesting, instead of, first it could be a conditional use in a C1 since that's already existing.
That's fine.
Yeah.
If it's instead of a CR1 being created for it, you're looking for a specific district that is just basically a gambling district.
Even if it, yeah, I mean, I even say if it's a C1, any district. In other words, just say a casino is only permitted in the casino district. So anywhere you want to locate one in Sussex County, you have to go in and make an application for the casino district. And then you're right, you would have to come up with new setbacks and do all this other stuff.
So no different than if it were conditional use.
I know, but my problem is we approve a rezoning, and then I'm stuck with, or right. Somebody's stuck with, or the neighbors are stuck with, all these things that can go in a C1 district.
So it could be similar to a rezoning and an RPC overlay. So you're doing a rezoning with a casino overlay. Just throwing that word in there. Overlay word's not a very good word to use.
Right,
so
right.
A problem with that. But something similar in that realm, whereby you'd have to create an acreage, you have to create setbacks just like it was a
right,
new district.
Right, right. There's a minimum acreage, right? Minimum, and then has certain infrastructure has to be available and all this other stuff. So
what kind of road it will be on, too.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We could even put it on, like, exactly. So, in other words, instead of, this just seems to me that we're opening up something that that the conditional use, in other words, we approve the change of zone, and when we even if we approved a conditional use, years go by, it falls apart because of funding or whatever. So the conditional use goes by the wayside, but then we're stuck with 30 acres, 40 acres of a C1 district in an area that.
So you want to create like a gambling district?
Bingo.
GD1.
I'll put $2 on
that. I don't know if
we
want to go GD1.
I think it might be appropriate.
GD1.
You might want to come up with the term for it.
Anyway, that would be my thoughts on as we look at this, because again the weakness of what we're looking at here, and it's I mean, I think everything else is good, and we can use all this stuff. But if we created another thing, Lawrence, I mean, how difficult is it to come up with certain setbacks? I know we...
Basically, it would be based on a lot of the commercial.
Exactly, yeah, a lot of what we already have.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You'd want to establish probably some additional ones.
Right.
You've got to create a size parcel, which is all the districts have, pretty much.
Now, is that... I mean, I don't want to waste a lot of time. I don't know whether the rest of the consent, if there's any consensus to do this, but I don't want to waste a lot of the time you've already put into this. We can take a lot of this, right?
Well, you can take, I mean, you can, because we'll still have definitional terms,
right.
And you're still going to have all these, you know, you would just put this in there, the casino, and have all these 1 through,
okay.
What is it?
12.
12. So those would all,
good.
Yeah, you could merge them all into it.
Right.
But then you have to also include all the permitted uses, accessory uses, the other type of uses that are be allowed. As typical permitted use list is long, lengthy in a commercial district.
Well, it could be a little.
It would be basically you take a district and just revert.
And I can envision when they talked about some of these places, they had family things. They had water parks. I could even see movie theaters in there. I could see a number of things in there. So I don't mind, again, putting a list and limiting it to some of this stuff. But I don't know how the rest of you feel. And somebody chime in if you want. But I think a special district, a GD district, would be the most appropriate.
That's what I thought we were doing.
Well, I don't know. We just dropped it on the staff, and this is where
we
are
commercial?
Now.
How about a CG district that's commercial gambling? Not the...
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, anybody share Mike?
Should we include the marijuana dispensary in this district as well?
That's another issue. I don't know. The state regulates all that.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't keep
What's
expanding
that?
It.
Mr. Deere, do you have anything?
No.
Mr. Wilson,
you have
comments?
We have tethering dogs in it. Tether your dog outside as you go in to gamble.
Yeah.
But only for 15 minutes.
No, longer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson.
I said that's direction. I was
okay.
Do you like,
yep.
Is that?
I think that's, yeah, I think that's.
Is that a better? Does that end of a lot of the conversation
basically
we're
basically eliminating the conditional use aspect of it and making it a district that has to be created. We have to establish it as a district and relate to the permitted uses, accessory uses. You made reference to the recreational side. They should probably include hotels and motels because that's a typical use in general.
Water parks.
Thinking of what's in the state already, and water parks or whatever. Horse tracks, et cetera.
And I'm sure there's other jurisdictions that have addressed it similar ways that we can look at what uses they've permitted and easily take what we like and
I don't know if we've actually found a gambling district.
No, they've been mostly
we'll have to go back to URDC and see if they can pop that for us.
Because that's where, when I talk to URDC, that's why they were more towards the conditional use, because most of the places that have done them were conditional use. So that's kind of why they... And we talked, and that's why we went that way. But that doesn't, again.
Okay, but as an attorney, and Everett as an attorney, you don't see any
problems
creating a special standalone district.
No.
No.
He said no. Okay.
I mean, is that comfortable? Everybody comfortable with that, Sam?
Apparently so.
Standalone district?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll support it, but I think that's probably the right way to go.
I mean, it's the best. What would you support? Is there something else you like better?
Just don't have any opinion on
okay.
it.
Okay, no opinion from Mr. Phillips.
All right.
I'll have that debate with you.
if you would take this information and make the appropriate changes, and as soon as you, within reason, can bring that back to us as a... option for an ordinance, we will discuss that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Rodney T. Marvel, Assistant Director of Environmental